All right. Well, hey, everyone. This is Dr. Paul White, co-author of The 5 Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, along with my friend and colleague, Dr. Gary Chapman. And this is our podcast focused on making work relationships work and how to apply the 5 languages of appreciation to daily work life. We want to be practical, and that's our goal. So today I have a good friend of mine, Dan Agnew, that's joining us. Dan, you and I have known each other for quite a few years now, and you've been providing appreciation at work training for a number of different types of organizations. And we actually started working together long distance when you were, I think, a national sales manager for a large corporation. And so tell me and tell us just a little bit about yourself, your professional background, and also how you found out about the 5 languages of appreciation.
Sure. Dr. Paul, and thank you for having me here. It's a real pleasure to be here. And I started, you know, when I take a look back in time, I go, you know, it's been a while ago. Mm-hmm. So when I look back at when I first got out of college, I graduated with a technical degree, and I began right into sales. And part of it was because I love technology, but I love to deal with people. So I found another way I could do that was get into technical sales. Mm-hmm. And it was business-to-business sales. And so I went up through a major corporation, getting into sales management and everything. And then in 1986, I met my wife, and then we're in our 33rd year of marriage this year.
All right. Congratulations.
And so Stacy and I have been married that long. And so we enjoyed our life together. We began building a family. And so we've got 9 children and 9 grandchildren.
Wow.
And yeah, the numbers are
daunting. Kind
of big. Yeah. She gets the credit for that too. And so in 1995, we were actually coming back from a long trip and we heard about the 5 love languages. And then we got really interested in applying them, and we actually began to apply the 5 love languages curriculum and book to some of our marriage mentoring efforts at church. And so as we're doing that, I'm thinking, you know, this can really apply in the workplace. And Stacy said, you know, you could take this to the workplace. Yeah, in corporate America, I'm not so sure.
Right,
about that.
Right.
But so as time went on, I took a position with another large corporation as the national sales manager. And a lot of what I did was in teaching as well as mentoring. And they said, hey, would you like to be our national sales training manager? So I became that for them and began training not only salespeople, but also sales managers. And one of the things that in our coaching skills class, there was a point in there about high performance coaching managers that they reinforce to people that they are important people doing important work.
Mm-hmm.
And in every class I had, they said, well, we understand how we reinforce important work, but how do we reinforce important people?
Wow.
So I'd always ask the question and get crickets in the class. No.
Yeah.
And about my second year of teaching that class, my wife Stacy said, hey, did you see where they released the 5 languages of appreciation in the workplace? So I got excited about that. And that's when I contacted you, Dr. White, because after I read the book, I thought, man, this is something that really, this answers that question.
Right.
How do you begin to reinforce that? That kind of started our journey together, and I took the 5 languages curriculum and taught it inside of the corporation, both in live sessions as well as virtual sessions and everything. And then at the end of 2015, I exited corporate America after 38 years of that journey and started my own business, consulting and coaching business, and became a premier partner with Appreciation at Work.
Right.
And since then, I've partnered with the Brooks Group as a director of sales effectiveness, and I deliver customized and specialized sales and sales management training. And also became an associate pastor at Open Bible Christian Church here in Dayton.
So you don't have enough going on in your life.
You know what?
No, that's cool. Well, you know, I am not a sales professional, and I've grown to, as a business owner, I've grown to appreciate salespeople, because if you don't sell anything, you don't have any revenue to come in to pay anybody. And a lot of the work you've done, not all of it, but a lot of this you've done has been with sales teams. Tell me about how the five languages of appreciation work with or are relevant to sales. Because a lot of people would say, well, salespeople get paid commission and they're sort of motivated by just the dollar. But is that true, or how does appreciation fit in there?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, that's kind of one of the things that when I look at the sales group, I think that's a misperception. In fact, the phrase that I hear, well, all salespeople are coin operated.
Oh, wow.
And you know what? To some degree, you want them financially motivated.
Right,
yes.
Right.
But it goes well beyond that. What's interesting is I began rolling out the five appreciation languages at the corporate level. I was surprised how many sales leaders, it was a huge revelation to them that not all sales reps are wired the same in the way that they want to receive appreciation, feel valued. In fact, I had one sales director that she says, well, wait a minute. No, all salespeople want to be recognized in front of a big group. Man, that's why we have big sales meetings and why we show off what we do and whatever else. And as we went through it, she actually went back and polled the members of her team. In the next session, she came back. She said, wow, I did not realize that not everybody really thought that was really keen.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the things I've done for every one of my keynote messages on appreciation, or especially when I do training, I ask people to show by show of hands how many of them really don't want to go up in front of a large group to be recognized. And it varies, right? I mean, if you have sort of a general workforce group, it's usually around 40%, which is significant. That means 4 out of 10 people don't want. Administrative assistants is more like 60 to 70%. Librarians are 90%. And I tend to use the example of salespeople of they're like, where's the TV and cameras bringing on? But so do you have any sense of what kind of ratio she had about the number of people that didn't? Or just...
No, but here's the thing. Here's the variation.
Yeah.
Some would say you can keep that pomp and circumstance in front of everybody.
Right.
But I wouldn't mind if here at the local office, if with me and my team, you provided that recognition.
Right.
And I want to be there. In other words, what they're saying is, I enjoy the recognition, but I really want it with my team.
Got it. And we also differentiate between receiving some kind of appreciation from your team, a small group, whether it's on a conference call or at a team meeting, versus going in front of the whole company.
Right.
I've had a number of people just say, I had one gal, she said, you can give me an award, but you're going to have to shoot me to get me up on stage. And just she was major league against it. And we have to think through that as leaders, right? That one of our core values and principles is not everybody feels appreciated in the same way. And
right.
We have to understand that not everybody likes to go up front. And if it's for them, if we're trying to show appreciation for them in a way that's meaningful, we shouldn't have to drag them up front. We may have to alter that a bit. In fact, I was working with an international recognition company, and we were talking about this, and they said, wow, that's important. No, they talked to the person that was going to get the Employee of the Year award, and he did not want to go up front. What he wanted was a handwritten note from the CEO that he could show his friends and family. He didn't mind his name being out there in a printed form or on the intranet or whatever, but he didn't want to physically have to go up. And it was helpful to know that he didn't want that. And so you didn't put him through something that was going to be a negative experience for him.
Sure. And I think you get a lot of salespeople that, of course, they're not afraid to talk to people, and that's good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you tend to place them in a category, well, they must be like that. And as managers are promoted, if they really have a high individualistic motivator and like the limelight and everything, that's the way they feel they ought to reward all of their salespeople.
Right, right.
As we went through the training, I think a big get for some of the sales managers and directors was, not everybody, feel valued in the same way that I do.
Right. Yeah, and that's sort of a key skill that I keep harping on, and it's called perspective-taking ability. It's the ability to see situations from other people's point of view. And it's at the heart of really healthy relationships and empathy and all that, that it's like your view, your life, your background, your personality style is different than me. And so just because I like this, whether it's a kind of reward or recognition, doesn't mean everybody else does. And some people, it takes a while to get that.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. And I was surprised that this is the first time many have heard the message from this point of view, I'm going to say.
Okay.
You know, because we did training on DISC.
Right.
So everybody began to understand, you know, differences in behavioral styles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't translate necessarily into the expressing of appreciation.
Right.
And so I think that's one of the things, just because you understand one segment of behavior and whatever, that's not the whole story.
Yeah. So setting aside the sort of going up front in front of everybody else, mm-hmm. what else did you learn about sort of the full spectrum of the five languages and how they applied to salespeople? Were there other observations that you had in that process?
Oh, yeah, I sure did. One of the things was that I did a poll and a study with some salespeople, and one of the things that I noticed was that a lot of the things that they really valued the most were customer-centric.
Hmm.
Because, you know, a lot of their livelihood, of course, is centered around the customer.
Right.
And this probably applies to not so much a transactional kind of a business as much as it does those that you really have to rely on relationships in the business. And,
mm-hmm.
and what they, the different languages seem to be centered around including the customer in some way. In fact, we kind of have the antithesis of the five languages. If I think you call it, you know, those that are easily offended,
right?
And in fact, one person commented back to me. He said, "You know what? Because my manager doesn't give me the time that I need, particularly around customer issues, that devalues me."
Mm.
He used those exact words.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's really important. Anything that's centered around the customer. In fact, I was talking to some managers in class, and what they do is they express their appreciation about the sales rep in front of their customers.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so what you're doing is, you know, you're taking that customer-centric setting, and you're saying, you know what, you've got one of our best people here on your account, and appreciate what John brings as far as detail goes. And that just kind of speaks to John's character and wanting to make sure that you got the best that you got.
Right.
And so, you know, and that means a lot when you can do that for a salesperson. So that's kind of one of the things I found out, is that if you can gear it around the customer, it carries that much more value.
Yeah. You know, and that sort of is a parallel to another example I've had for people that don't work in sales. One of the most powerful experiences that I've been told about and have seen as well is when someone is working on a project and having to work overtime and long hours and really put forth a lot, that at the end of that, this one leader told me that they wrote a letter to the employee's family.
Oh, yeah.
And even their kids, and said, "Hey, thanks for sharing mom with us over the last few weeks. I know that she's not been there in the evenings as much and on the weekends, and just want to let you know what a great job she did and how much we really value what she did. And she made it happen for us, but you all helped make that happen." And man, that warmed the mom's heart, right? I mean, that, you know, it went to her kids rather than to her. And so sort of that same kind of thing is in front of the customer. And so we need to think about it. It's not always directly to the person. And I know similarly in, let's say, some kind of meeting or meal where you maybe have spouses there, and being able to compliment the employee in front of their spouse can be very meaningful. Now, one of the things we know and have learned about compliments is it needs to be specific, right? It's not just like your dad's a really good worker, you know, hard worker. So, yeah.
Good guy.
He's a good guy, you know. But to be really as specific as you can, because the more general and vague you are, the more people wonder, did this person think anything about this? Is this for real, or are they just saying this? Whereas if you're very specific about, your dad does a really good job of leading his team and helping pull together lots of different people to get the job done, and being as specific as you can, then people realize, hey, okay, they've thought about it and it's genuine.
Yes, I really think that's important. And I think that's one of the things that as we take managers and salespeople through the five languages training, having them to be specific about that. And the other thing too is being specific as much as possible to link it to a positive character.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where you really begin to make the connection with the individual being an important person.
Right. Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard for a lot of people to get out of the performance-only mentality. I mean, as managers, we're trained that way.
Right.
And so this really helps a person begin to go, okay, I can put performance in its proper place, but I need to value the individual, and here's a way that I can do that.
Yeah. And just for those that are listening that maybe not as familiar, so Dr. Chapman and I wrote The 5 Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, and we're thankful it's doing well. It came out in 2011, and since then it's become a business bestseller. The average business book sells about 3,000 copies. We just recently passed 360,000 copies, and it's in 17 languages. We came out with a revised and updated version here in January of 2019 and updated research and so forth. And as part of that, we have the Motivating by Appreciation inventory, which a code comes with the book, or you can go to our website and buy codes for people that don't want to read the book. And that's fine. It's appreciationatwork.com is the website. And it's the word at, not the sign. But we have a lot of different kinds of research that we've done. And you, Dan, referred to one set of articles that we found that besides people receiving appreciation in different ways, that their language of appreciation is also the language in which they're most easily offended. So for a person whose words of affirmation is their primary language, they're sort of more sensitive to constructive criticism or critique. And so you don't have to say it as much or as hard to them as you might somebody else. And so you have to be careful about that. Or for quality time, if you repeatedly reschedule a meeting with them, that essentially sends the message that other things are more important to them and so forth. So if you go to our website and go to the Learn tab, and we've got a list of lots of articles and videos, and you can find those there, or you can find the videos on YouTube and Vimeo as well. But Dan, I want to go back to the thing you said about character, because one of the things we found out about for people that have words as their primary language, that if you talk about character, it really takes it to another level, because there's a difference between saying, man, I really appreciate, Brenda, that you show up day in, day out on time, even a little bit early, and you're here and we're good to go. That's fine. And that's behavior. But to say to Brenda, and Brenda, I really value that you are dependable, that I don't have to worry about whether you're going to show up. If I ask you to do something, I know it's going to get done. And for a person that words are important, that just grabs their heart, man. And they're going to, you've motivated, and they're going to go to battle with you, you know. And yeah, but lots of times we don't think about that. We think about behavioral stuff, which is okay. But if you can think about a character quality, that's really even more impactful.
Yeah. In fact, in one of the polls that I did with salespeople, that was called out. In fact, the quote from the salesperson was, I got a handwritten note from a colleague of a job well done. And then he said, with the motivator at the close of the note being, I can always depend on you.
Wow.
And he coined, you know, he put that word motivator in there. And that told me how strong of an impact that you know, I can depend on you is. And I don't think we do that enough.
Right. Well, and we're not really taught or trained to think that way, because lots of times it's about tasks, right? It's about performance.
Right.
And I really appreciate you bringing up the issue of that. It's about the person. We just really feel like people have value more than what they produce in the work that they get done. And that gets people's attention when you get to know them as a person and call attention to those character qualities that maybe don't have anything to do with work at all. I mean, it could be, man, Dave, I just think it's cool how you're training for a half marathon and just the self-discipline you have to do that. I'm impressed with that. It's not about work, but it's about them. And it's going to build some commitment and loyalty just in your relationship with them.
I'd just like to springboard off of something you mentioned there, because I think it's something that I always get the question in class kind of towards the end of, like, well, supposing I don't appreciate somebody.
Right.
or they're afraid. Let's say there is a poor performer in the group, and there's the fear of, you know, well, gee, if I show a form of appreciation, they may think I'm condoning poor behavior, and, you know, so I was like, well, okay, you know, and it's a matter of, you know, the authentic piece is so important. So if you don't appreciate,
don't try to fake it.
Right. But then in the next breath, I say, now your next step is to find something that you can appreciate about them. And to your point, likely it's going to be some outside of work.
Right, right.
But is there not something? And it's almost like, okay, so your assignment is to find something.
Yeah.
Until you do, don't fake it.
Right. Yeah. Faking it does not end well because people tend to be able to read through that and then it undermines any kind of trust you may have. But I think the other part about that and the thing that I've learned is when I don't appreciate someone in the workplace, first of all, often I really don't know what they do. You know, they have
True.
A title, and yeah. especially if it's, I don't directly supervise them, but they're working for somebody else. And so I encourage people to sit down and talk and find out what they really do. And once you find that out, you realize that they've got certain skills that you can value and appreciate. And then right. also, even beyond that, is just to find out a little bit more about them as a person. What did they do before they worked here? Where have they lived? Tell a little bit, you know, if they're willing about their family or whatever. And usually in that process, there's some kind of touch point between your life and theirs, whether it's about a sport or where you lived or some life circumstance that you can then show some value and appreciation and affirm them for that. So it's less about being productive on this task. Yeah, you still have to hold them accountable for that, but finding out more specifically about what they do and then also just getting to know them as a person. And I'm not just saying a 5-minute one-time conversation. I mean, you can either over a lunch or maybe a few conversations over time.
Sure. You know, one of the things that I found about the 5 appreciation languages training process, in there we have the particularly work teams get together. Each person goes around and kind of just talk about their MBAI, you know, what is their primary language, what's their secondary language.
Mm-hmm.
But more specifically about, you know, what particular action items or what really speaks to you and why.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in fact, just a few weeks ago, I held a session for about 140 people. And some of the comments I got at the end, because I made them in that big session in there, go to your work teams, now have this discussion. Just share what the most important action items are to you and why.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got done, the comments, you know, I never knew that about that individual. And they work with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So just because we have conversations, sometimes when it's centered around a particular purpose in mind, like with this course was around the 5 languages of appreciation, but it introduces a conversation you've never had with that individual.
And yeah.
It's about them.
Yeah. I love that about our inventory. So for those that aren't aware, so the MBA inventory is online assessment. Takes about 10 or 15 minutes to take it and identifies your primary and secondary language and your least valued language, which is sort of your blind spot. It's the one you don't think about. It's not that important to you, but you have team members that have that. And so you pay attention to that. Otherwise, you sort of miss them. But also, it then identifies in your primary language the specific actions that are important to you and from whom you want those. And so what's fun about that, it's a kind of information and conversation most of us don't have with one
right.
another and allows you to be able to get to know one another fairly quickly in a deeper way than you did before.
That's I find that to be one of the keys of the whole training process is that it's a format by which people can really feel a little bit free about having conversations with each other in a
right.
deeper way, in a different way.
Right. Now, Dan, you've worked, obviously, for most of your career in sales and sales management, but you've also, both at a personal level and more recently professionally, moved into working with nonprofit organizations and ministries. How is that the same or different? In my mind, I think there's got to be something different, but probably something the same too, comparing working with nonprofit team members versus sales people and sales managers. Tell us about that. What's that
sure.
like?
Sure. Sure. I'm going to zero in on looking at church and parachurch organizations because one of the things, the big difference there is many times you go from the environment of an employment structure to a volunteer structure.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at volunteers, you bring your church volunteer team in, and then you go to the leaders and say, okay, so what issues are you facing? It's like, oh, man, you know, we have trouble keeping volunteers.
Right.
You know, and you go to the volunteers and say, yeah, I just get burned out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in an employment situation, usually the people quit, but they hang on being employed. You know?
They're there physically, but not mentally or
exactly.
otherwise. Okay.
Exactly. And volunteers most likely just quit showing up or they don't participate, or there's all different kinds of cues on that. But in the volunteer organization, if somebody does not feel fulfilled,
they're gone.
And rather quickly.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, inside of the church, sometimes we have so programmatically, in a sincere effort to value what somebody does, but it comes out to be just so programmatic, whether it be an annual event of, you know, bringing everybody up front, which is, we said earlier, as well, okay, that may not minister to many people. You
right.
know, but it is a different environment from that standpoint. But the other piece of it, too, and I've ran across some people say, well, you know, hey, I shouldn't need appreciation because I'm doing this for the glory of God.
Right.
And believe me, I so much understand and respect doing it for the glory of God is so important. And also, I read a lot in Scripture about honoring one another.
Right.
And it's like, okay, so we got to do both here. And actually, when we love each other correctly and do it well, we're honoring God.
Right.
And one of the Scriptures that I use as kind of foundational for the five languages inside of church is from Romans 12, 9 and 10. It says, don't just pretend to love others, really love them. And it goes a little bit further and says, love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other.
Wow.
And I said, okay, so let's talk now about appreciation at work. I said, well, that's at work. And so I recoined, and my wife actually thought of the title of this as I'm saying, well, here's what I'm teaching, how I'm teaching the five languages of the church and everything. She says, well, it sounds like the title needs to be something like, just because they call it ministry doesn't mean it isn't work.
Nice.
And I said, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And many pastors relate to that. Mm. Yes, it still is a work environment because things get done. My pastor, Dr. Randy Grimes, near and dear mentor to my heart, he says, from the book of Grimes, it says, wherever there are two or more gathered, there will be conflict.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. I love that saying, just because they call it ministry doesn't mean it's work. And a number of years ago, as a result of the work with appreciation that we were doing, I would have people come up at breaks and afterwards and tell me what a nasty workplace was, or, you know, what a jerk your boss was. So we wound up doing research and wrote a book on toxic workplaces called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. And we've just recently created some online video tutorials about that. And to be honest, the saddest part to me was that the worst stories about toxicity and people being mistreated were in church and ministry settings, which is just like, man, that should not be. And it's like, why does that happen? And I think there's a number of reasons. One of them is that whole issue about we're not supposed to work for the praise of men, but the glory of God, and shouldn't look for appreciation, which is true, and that it's not about us. But I sort of respond and say, yeah, but that doesn't mean that you treat people like dirt at the same time. I mean, you know, there's this thing like we're supposed to be kind and loving towards one another. And one of the things that's exciting to me about the language of appreciation is I think it really gives those of us who are followers of Christ practical ways to show love and service. Service and kindness in day-to-day work settings. And so that it's not just sort of conceptual or abstract, but it's, it gets down to day-to-day life. And to me, that's really exciting because there's nothing really, not much as exciting or rewarding to be able to affirm somebody and you see them light up. I mean, you do it in a way that's meaningful to them. I mean, I have a team member that will occasionally have donuts when we're all sort of at the, not all of us, but a lot of us are at the age where we don't need donuts, but we do it every once in a while. And one of my team members loves the maple logs kind of things. And intentionally get that and say, hey, this is for you because I know you like those. And just the smile that just brightens the room. It's just like, yeah, thanks for thinking about me. And it's those little things that make a difference. And it's people react to tangible gifts sometimes, and especially in ministry settings. Some ministry settings, they're not allowed to give gifts to other people within the workplace. And so we've actually created a ministry and not-for-profit version of the inventory that if you go to mbainventory.com, you can find out about. And we sort of retooled the gifts so that it can be maybe a coupon for watching your kids so you can go run some errands or whatever. Tangible gifts isn't about the stuff. It's about the thought. It's right. It's not that you're not going to get a flat screen TV. I mean, that's just not happening, right? But but it might be that you bring in their favorite cup of coffee. You know, like in the fall, they got the pumpkin spice stuff. And you bring that in and say, hey, I know you like this. And it's more about paying attention to what people like and then thinking about them and doing just a little action that way.
Oh, that's it. In fact, at church, we've been teaching the five languages of appreciation since 2013, something like that. And our worship leader, he's one of the people that whose primary is gifts. There's not a whole lot of us that are gifts.
Right.
But he is. And you look at him, you go, I don't think I would have thought he was a gifts person.
Right.
But, you know, not that they should look a certain way, but you go, wow. And you mentioned the thing about coffee. Well, he's a big Starbucks fan.
Uh-huh.
I love to be able to take particularly Starbucks K-cups and just occasionally like put it up on the keyboard.
Oh, nice.
Like say, hey, you know, thanks for... Or you know, if I stop by a Starbucks, by the time I get to church, it's kind of settled and
right.
kind of cold. So you can see he really likes that because it speaks that language. And he what he does on the worship team, he understands what their language is, and he tries to do the same with them, too. So, you know, in the church, sometimes we set ourselves up for not doing appreciation, either because of old patterns that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, there's an opportunity for us to really love each other well just by doing some of the things in a very meaningful manner like that.
Yeah. Obviously, within ministries and churches, it's important, but my personal passion is to help those of us who are attempting to follow and love Christ, but work day-to-day in a secular work setting, how to demonstrate it that way, because that's where most of us live, to be honest. And to be able to give people a tool to learn how to encourage their colleagues and the people with whom they work, I just find extremely valuable. And just to sort of differentiate, I tend to think about appreciation as focusing on the past. In other words, what you've done. And I appreciate that, or what you've demonstrated. And encouragement is more present and future-oriented, that you're coming alongside. Because sometimes at work, you know, you're working on a project, and you just keep running into obstacles and barriers, and you just feel like, man, you just get worn out. And it's helpful to have encouragement and for somebody to come along and say, hey, I know you're working long hours. Why don't you take an extra long lunch? And time off, like comp time or that kind of thing, is really a tangible gift in the way we think about it. It's not quality time, but be able to come in and encourage somebody so that they keep motivated and keep moving forward.
I think that's such a strong point in helping us to really to be that light of Christ in the workplace. And it is a very tangible way of doing it. After I was delivering this inside of the company for a while, my manager, for one thing, he strongly supported the five languages. He wasn't quite sure about it first.
Mm-hmm.
He says, well, you know, Dan, you do sales and sales management training. What's this? And I explained to him. He says, well, okay, you can take the course for self-improvement, and we'll talk about whether you bring it to the company. And I did. He began seeing that, and he came back to me in about the end of 2014 and said, Dan, here's what I want you to do. And he put me on my own task of coming up with my leadership philosophy.
Hmm.
There's a book that kind of walks you through the process of that, The Leader's Compass. But he held me accountable to that. Every couple of weeks, he'd say, how you doing on your leadership philosophy?
Hmm.
Okay, I'm working on it, Jerry. I'm working. But what it did, when I went back and I read it and I gave it to him, he said, I can hear the five languages of appreciation in there.
Huh.
In like some of the opening statements I had, there's a section there about, what is it that you believe?
Right.
So you articulate this. So I had in there, you are important. Everyone has intrinsic value and is designed to fulfill the unique God-given purposes.
Cool. Yeah.
And what I expect from you, one of the bullet items I had, to express appreciation often in a way that the recipients personally value.
Mm-hmm.
He said, yep, I'm seeing that. But really, when you start practicing the expression of appreciation in the way that others need it and in the way that they value it, it does begin to change you.
Yeah. What's interesting is that when I teach and train about the language of appreciation, one of the core concepts is not everybody feels appreciated in the same way. And I say, okay, who agrees with this? Everybody agrees with it. I say, okay, well, I think intellectually we assent to this, but if I would follow you around for the week and watch you encouraging and showing appreciation. I'm guessing you're going to mainly use the two or three same things to everybody, not out of malintent, but just that's sort of your repertoire, right? And and so one of the things I love about the inventory and the other resources we've created is it expands people's universe of what can be done to encourage or show appreciation. That an act of service, for example, in a school setting, it can be watching another teacher's kids so that she can make some phone calls or get caught up on paperwork. In a office setting, it might be covering somebody's calls and running interference so they can stay focused on a project for a couple hours and really bang it out and get through it. Not just sort of cleaning up, doing filing or whatever. I mean, that can be helpful too, but lots of times we don't know what to do and what's important to a person. And so being able to get that information, and one of our core values is we understand people are busy and you don't have time to write an email to everybody or stop by and see everybody. And so we want to help you become efficient and effective by learning not only the language, but the specific action that's important to that individual so that you can absolutely hit the target, even the bullseye, versus sort of shooting a shotgun and hoping you hit something.
Yeah, and that's such a great point, because sometimes when we use that shotgun approach, I remember back when we first started teaching this in the company, somebody came up to me, "Dan, thank you for everything that you do." And, you know, the first time, "Oh, thank you."
Right.
Second time, "Thank you for everything that you do." It's like, well,
yeah.
Okay. You know, what is it that I do?
Yeah. Tell me what. Exactly.
But what it did, I became more sensitive to the fact that they're trying to express that. They're just kind of faltering with it. So one of the things that I believe that as you begin to use more of the five languages, it also makes you more sensitive to those that really are trying to express it. They just have a difficulty. It gives you, it helps you to give them grace in their journey towards doing it too.
Yeah. Well, Dan, we sort of need to wrap things up here. So I want to ask you, what do you have either some lessons or one or two key points in talking to people in ministries that you would suggest to them that you've learned about appreciation in ministry settings?
Wow. In ministry settings, I would say that look at your ministry setting and know the people. Mm. It's so easy sometimes to know about people. It's so easy to know about their situation. But when you really get to know someone, that's where you really begin to grow a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is a relational issue or something like that, don't use the appreciation language as a fixer for it.
Mm-hmm.
Get the problem resolved first.
Mm-hmm.
But look at every person as an individual and find what it is that you appreciate about them.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great point about making sure things are clear. Even in any kind of work setting, I tell people, you know, sometimes it gets in the way if you've had some kind of issue or minor conflict in the past. And if you just sort of break out and say, "Man, I just really appreciate X or Y about you," but you don't pay attention to the fact that we really had this issue back here. And I just tell people, say, sort of bring it out and just say, "Hey, I know we had this different way of viewing things on this specific issue in the past, but in spite of that, I really do value the creativity that you bring to our team or your skills and so forth." But you've got to at least call out the fact that, yeah, there are other things, but that doesn't mean that I still can't value and appreciate you in this current setting.
Oh, that's it. That's it. And the other thing that I would say to pastors, and I love this, it's a scripture from Psalm 78. Towards the end of that particular psalm, it talks about King David. At the very end, it says that he shepherded them, which is Israel, according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands.
Hmm.
So it takes both. The integrity of heart, yes, it's so important, and keeping our heart warm for God, and but it's also skillfulness of hands.
Right.
It takes both.
Yeah.
So let's not think that just because we're in position that we've got all the answers, but let's continue to grow our skill set as well as our integrity of heart.
Yeah, cool. Well, Dan, man, I really appreciate your time and your input. I value you as one of our premier partners and leaders in providing appreciation work training to a variety of organizations. And I'm just thankful that we have such a great group of team members of both high quality character and also competence. And it's really a joy for me to be able to help you guys do your deal and look good out there. So,
well, thank you. And it is such a pleasure to be able to bring this to every setting. It's awesome.
Yeah, and that is fun. It's that it's not just to church settings. It's not just to schools or offices. You know, we've got it in hospitals and not-for-profits and long-term care facilities and manufacturing and all that. And so that's fun to be able to see that work. So we're going to close up here today, and I just want to thank you all for listening. And if you need or want more information, go to our website, appreciationatwork.com. It's the word at appreciationatwork.com. And we'll look forward to sharing with you again. As you know, this is just one in a series of podcasts on making work relationships work and applying the five languages of appreciation to daily life work. And I hope you have a great rest of the day, and just be thankful for all the good things that are out there in your life. Thanks.